If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We'll be right back.
big deal. Hot like wax or razor beam. Whip you into shape like you're a cream. Cause that's how I roll. Do whatever I want, tell a soul. I can ride around that pole. Go with the juice, go with the flow. Holla when you wanna, you know I do. Holla when you're on it, you know my sound. Juices move at the speed of light. Bet it all on love tonight.
Jesus. Tonight. Jesus. Jesus. You just heard Final Credits by Midland. Before that was Juices by Parallel Dance Ensemble. And then before that was Disco Dancer by Kiki Guyan. Row House Cinema joins you in supporting WRCT. Row House Cinema is a single screen theater in the historic Lawrenceville neighborhood of Pittsburgh. Each week, they choose a new movie theme showing classic, cult, foreign, animation, fun, and fantastic films in a magical setting. Their concession stand features natural popcorn with real butter, craft beer, and vegan options. Although the doors to the theater are closed during the ongoing pandemic, Row House is still hosting many events online and in person when possible, trying their best to keep film culture strong in Pittsburgh through the pandemic. Row House Cinema is located at 4115 Butler Street in Lawrenceville. More information is available at www.rowhousecinema.com or by calling 412-904-3225. If you are interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. Law & Disorder is a weekly independent radio program. Law & Disorder Radio gives listeners access to legal perspectives on issues concerning civil liberties, privacy, right to dissent, and the practices of the U.S. government, Mondays 9 to 10 a.m. You just heard I Can Deal With That by Dee Edwards, and up next is Lady Magnolia by Piero Umiliani, and Now That I Have You by Tommy McGee. Thank you.
Oh, 45 over 92.
180 over 111.
I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest and then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life. Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you, start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
Now I'm, trying to get better, stronger than ever.
Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
Thank you.
You just heard Jungle Music by Kalinke Band and Everybody by Roy Ayers. And if you liked my set tonight, you can go to WRCT.org and find the playlist. I have linked it to my show. You can also join me next week from 7 to 8 p.m. on Tuesdays. And that is it for me. Thank you so much. This is The Gray Area on WRCT Pittsburgh. And I hope you enjoy the next set.
In India, we are talking about open anti-science behavior because there are still members of the ruling party and ministers of the government who are going around claiming that cow dung and cow urine either prevent or deal with and treat this disease. I mean, I don't know what we have done as a country to get a government that would give us this kind of unscientific and brutal approach to a pandemic.
That's Jyoti Ghosh, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Jyoti Ghosh on India's COVID catastrophe. The news from India is grim. A COVID wave is sweeping the country, inflicting widespread misery and deaths. Government figures of COVID-related fatalities are widely seen as being very much underreported. India may soon pass the United States as the global leader in deaths. Analysts say that the country wasn't prepared to handle the surge. Hospitals have been overwhelmed, and there are acute shortages of oxygen, medicine, and vaccines. The country is ruled by Narendra Modi of the Bharatiya Janata Party, the BJP. It's a Hindu nationalist party. It has come under wide criticism for its handling of the crisis. Noted Indian writer Arundhati Roy says, "It is hard to convey the full depth and range of the trauma, chaos, and indignity that India's COVID catastrophe has inflicted." Meanwhile, Modi and his allies tell people not to complain. Our guest today is Jyoti Ghosh. She's a renowned, award-winning economist and author. Her articles appear in major newspapers, journals, and magazines. She taught at Jawaharlal Nehru University in New Delhi for almost 35 years. She's now teaching at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. I talked with her on May 19th. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
What has the pandemic revealed to you in terms of the global capitalist political and economic system?
We knew that capitalism was already a very unequal and unjust system. But I think the severity with which it has struck, especially the developing world now, and the extent to which it's exposed the flaws has revealed how unequal and how unjust, and also how unsustainable it is. It is really a system under which humanity will not survive.
In an article in Dollars and Cents, you write, "The COVID-19 pandemic is bringing home the fact that neoliberalism is posing a massive danger to public health, and therefore to the very survival of societies." For those who may not know, explain the basic characteristics of neoliberal economics, and why is it called neoliberal?
So neoliberalism is supposed to be an extension of earlier liberal economics, which basically argued that markets should be allowed to function on their own without too much regulation, and states should kind of get out of the way. Neoliberalism is an extreme version of that, which really emerges as a major significant force in economic policymaking from about the 1980s onwards. But it's a mistake to think that it actually asks for states to withdraw. It's not about the withdrawal of the state. It's rather about using the power of the state to promote the interests of big capital. And so what we've seen in the face of neoliberal globalization is that it's really a massive increase in state support to and protection of large capital in finance, in various other industries, vis-a-vis workers, vis-a-vis citizens, vis-a-vis ordinary people everywhere. what they do is that they will promote free markets when it suits large capital so that they can destroy small capital or destroy workers by, you know, making them compete against one another. Or they will promote concentrated markets and monopolies when it suits them, like the case of intellectual property rights and patents.
India's independence in 1947 is followed by a period of what is generally called the kind of liberal socialist economic programs. But in the early 1990s, it embraces neoliberalism. How has the country fared under this economic doctrine?
You know, in India, we already had some major development failures even before the neoliberal phase. We had a failure in terms of adequate food and nutrition for most of our population. In terms of a basic structural transformation, we were not able to move people out of low productivity activities in agriculture and services. In terms of inadequate education and human development indicators. So we did have some development failures. And those should have been corrected by a different strategy of reform than the one that was adopted. What we got from the 1990s onwards was the notion that the way to achieve growth and development was to promote large capital in the belief that it would then trickle down to the rest of the population. And therefore, the idea was to subsidize, to provide incentives of different kinds to large capital in various ways and to improve their bargaining power. What happened is that we did get some growth, no doubt about it. The 2000s in particular was a decade of faster growth than before. But a lot of it was based really on what you could call the extractive industries, minerals and other things, and an appropriation of small capital rather than genuine investments in technology and in productivity increases. And we did not get the required improvements in the conditions of living of the people. So even in that period of high growth, we didn't really get an improvement in the conditions of the bottom half of the population. Our nutrition indicators didn't improve. Our basic health indicators didn't improve. And we still have some of the worst human development indicators in the world for many of these.
So the mantra that was intoned time after time, Milton Friedman's, a rising tide will lift all boats, didn't quite work.
Well, we know that a rising tide hasn't lifted all boats anywhere in the world, and that to do that, you need proactive public intervention, which has to, again, come from demands from below that governments cannot refuse. So I would say India is a very stark example of that, where existing inequalities have been accentuated and deeply sharpened by economic processes that have further reduced the bargaining power of workers and peasants.
Well, you might also say that about the United States, which is arguably the world's richest country, but is experiencing the greatest number of COVID-19 deaths. It seems like a contradiction.
Yes, at one level it should be. I mean, now I think India will soon overtake the US in terms of the number of COVID deaths. Yet the fact that US suffered so terribly is a real indictment of its particular economic strategy. It shows that it has consistently undermined public health. We have countries like Vietnam that have fared so much better, or Cuba, much, much poorer countries operating under many more difficult constraints that have fared so much better because of a better, more vibrant public health system that is accessible to all. The United States chose a terribly expensive and incompetent and inefficient system of health provision that has favored private profiteering over public health, and it has suffered because of that. And we see now that pandemics, which are ultimately public health concerns, which are also, by the way, going to become more and more frequent. We cannot even pretend that this is a once-off and once we're over this hump, we're safe. We see that lack of reliance or investment in a public health system has deep consequences, not just for inequality and the conditions of people, but for social resilience and even economic resilience.
Writer and author, social critic Arundhati Roy says the state of India's hospitals and clinics, she says, the system has not collapsed. The system barely existed.
what kind of services are available to the average Indian, particularly in rural areas where something like 70%, the bulk of the population, live?
First of all, I want to remind everyone in the United States that India is a country of subcontinental dimensions. Its population is bigger than that of the European Union. It is more diverse than the European Union in terms of languages, cultures. It has states, and people in different states fare very differently depending on what kinds of governments and resources they have. So to think of India as one whole and to think of the average Indian is very misleading. There are some states like Uttar Pradesh in the north, which have about the same population as the United States. And Uttar Pradesh at the moment is a disaster zone. It is a complete mess. It has always had a poor public health system. It is now run by a government that is openly and aggressively trying to underplay and pretend that none of this is happening. And is instead of investing its resources in trying to save people from this incredible spread of disease and disaster, is going after anyone who points out that people are dying, is going after those who go onto social media saying, I need help, please get me oxygen. It is trying to arrest such people. So it's doing exactly the opposite of what needs to be done. In addition to the crime of encouraging major super spreader events, like a major Hindu festival that was brought forward by a full year and collected 4 million people on the banks of the River Ganges, and therefore was a massive super spreader event. After doing all that, it is then attacking those who are pointing out